Coral Castle is a limestone structure created by the Latvian-American Edward Leeds Skolnin. It is located in an unincorporated territory of Miami-Dade County in Florida between the cities of Homestead and Leisure City. The structure comprises numerous megalithic stones, mostly limestone, formed from coral, each weighing several tons. Now, how did this 140-pound man move these blocks of stone? That remains a mystery. In a moment, Joe Bullard joins us. His book, Waiting for Agnes, about Lee Skolnin, that was his girlfriend who dumped him back in Latvia. We're going to talk about Coral Castle next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Joe Bullard back with us. Joe was born in Florida back in 1951, attended the University of West Florida, and graduated with a bachelor's degree in journalism, and he put it to good use, writing the incredible book, Waiting for Agnes. We'll tell you about that in a moment. He spent years researching Coral Castle, and here he is back on Coast to Coast after about a four-year hiatus. Joseph, welcome back.
George, it's great to be back. You bring out the Ed in me.
I got to tell you, this story, no matter where I go, people are still bringing it up. What is so important? What is so magnificent about this?
George, I am in my 34th year, and the passion that you wrote about when we first interviewed in 2004, I have that passion because we have someone here who's unlike, he's built a structure. The guy said he understood the secrets of the Egyptians, the Peruvians, in Yucatan, and also, people forget this, in Asia. We've got a guy who understood Stonehenge, all these things. He put this amazing castle together, moves these stones with no help, no machinery. It's still a mystery, still unknown. And you and Lisa Lyon, the producer, are the only ones that they're keeping this story alive, and I'm so happy to be here with you. This is the 100th year. Now, think about this. This is 2018. In 1918, Ed walks from Canada, dowsing rod in hand, searching for ley lines.
Yeah, I mean, just the whole story is incredible. From the beginning, when he was in Latvia, and his 16-year-old girlfriend dumped him,
right?
He couldn't handle that, and her name was Agnes, right?
Agnes Scuffs.
And so he comes to the United States. He contracts tuberculosis. How does he beat it?
Well, actually, what happens is when she jilts him, he travels around the world. And he ends up in Canada working in a lumber yard for 4 years there. This is where he contracts tuberculosis. He actually got it before he came to Florida. They don't even know how he walked from Canada to Florida. The man was amazing. When he gets down here, he passes out. And this doctor examines him, and he says, you know, this is 1918. You've got terminal tuberculosis. Nobody survives it. You know, basically go home and die. And some friends there felt sorry for him. They took him in, and, you know, George, tuberculosis, you can't even get in the same room with the person. It's so contagious. But this farm family just took him in and put him on the porch and, you know, let the air blow, and they took care of him. And he went to a junkyard, and he built this pyramid. Now, you know, if you study pyramids much, the Great Pyramid, when you put the pyramid at a certain angle, with the north facing a certain angle, it creates an electromagnetic wave. Well, Ed knew this, so he built this pyramid, and he put it on this 3-ton stone that spins. It's limestone, just like you were talking about.
Yeah.
And he put a blue light at the top of this pyramid, so when the sun hits it, this blue light struck his chest. Then he hooks up, I want to call it like a VCR, with his perpetual motion holder, which I now call an anti-gravity machine. And Ed said, tuberculosis and cancer cannot live in a pulsating magnetic field. Now, it has to be pulsating. So he had this little button he pushed, and it caused this electromagnetic wave to go through his body, pulsating. It's much like the heartbeat. In 6 months, he went back to the doctor who declared him. He said, you have 6 months to live. Ed's blood and lungs were clear as a baby's.
Wow.
Only person to survive tuberculosis at that stage.
At that stage.
That we know of.
Now, new information is coming out, Joseph, and you've got some pretty wild thoughts about what Ed Leeds Skolnin might be.
Yeah, George, you know, I think we touched on this a little bit, but I'm a little scared to go too far.
Go for it.
Okay, look, you know, when Ray Stoner wrote the book, Enigma of Coral Castle, he actually, I'm going to give him credit too, he said Ed was either an alien, or he was an interdimensional being, or he was a time traveler. What gets me is all of the news that we hear now, they're talking about Mars. When Ed landed here, he was already saying his detailed knowledge of Mars is what makes me think, I don't want to say he was a Martian or had humanoid traits, but how did he know? He said at Coral Castle, in his planet wall there, he builds a 3-ton replica of Mars, and he planted an air palmetto plant up there. When he gave a tour, people said, Ed, what's the plant for? And he said, it's to represent that there was life on Mars at one time. Now, he didn't say this too much publicly, but the man I interviewed who told me the story of Ed, who owned the gas station there, Mr. J.T. Bullard, who I found out was a distant relative, that was a strange meeting there. He said that Ed used to tell him that, you know, he could feel it, and he had these strange vibrations about Mars. And he said there was water there, there was canals, and he also said there were oceans there. Well, now, if you've been watching the news lately, the rover has taken pictures. They've actually found, George, a salt water, not only water and canals. There's all kind of mysterious structures up there, but there's a salt water lake discovered. Now, we're talking 1918. Where did Ed get this information? I still don't know. His dreams and visions, he used to say that the human mind, if you pay attention to the magnetic properties of it, you can delve into the past through your dreams and visions, much like the Bible prophets did.
One of the funny things about Ed Leeds Skolnick were a couple of youngsters were one of the few people to sneak and watch him work. And didn't they say he was moving blocks like they were hydrogen balloons?
That's right. And I actually talked to a lady who, one of the last interviews that we did, she called me and she said, hey, my husband, my father was a truck driver. He was one of the children who actually saw those stones. And we're talking 3 o'clock in the morning. And no one ever saw him work, George, because he could detail the vibrations of a person trying to catch him. Everybody was trying to catch him at work. If you crawled like an alligator down there on your belly, he could still feel the vibrations. And I feel like he allowed these kids to see him because nobody believed the kids. And they said they saw these stones floating over the walls there. Now, you know, we've discussed this before. We think that when you're asking me how did he do this, his anti-gravity machine, we think he could have hooked an iron cable to it, wrapped it around these stones, cranked this magnetic machine up, moved them. It's a little bit far-fetched, but, I mean, how else did the guy do it? And they actually saw these stones, and they told, there was 3 or 4 kids there, and they told the adults, and they all laughed at him. Of course, you know, 1918, who's going to believe that?
Didn't he say, Joe, that he knew the secrets of how the pyramids were made?
He said the pyramids, and not only that, George, but he included Stonehenge, he included Yucatan, and Asia, and Peru.
Jeez.
So think about those. You know, I've seen Ancient Aliens so many times. I love that show. You've shown those ancient structures even in Asia. Most people don't even know Ed talked about Asia.
Now, he carved in an altar stone at Coral Castle the face of what looks like an alien.
Yes. That face, from what Mr. Buller told me, Ed's grandfather was like a merchant sailor, and he had found these books, and he found this actual stone representation of what he thought was an alien face. There was a theory there among the native tribes that the aliens had come down, given them the secrets to pyramid building. They'd actually put it on like a papyrus or like a stone and given it to them. And this face, he described to Ed, he had seen it. Well, this face is the same one that Ed put at this altar, and if you look at it, it's got the weird eyes, it's got the kind of enlarged head. The nose doesn't exist, just kind of like two holes, and the mouth is just almost like two lines. And when you look at it, of course, some people call it a monkey face. I'm not saying it's an alien face, but it sure resembles one, George.
What do you think of the birdbath? What do you think that is?
Oh, my gosh. That is one of the most incredible things. Now, what you have to realize is, the bird bath is created on the 30-ton stone. Now, it's on the back of the stone. Well, it's not included in any of the tours down there. But I went back around there one day. I was just checking it out, and I looked, and I said, what is that? And one of the guys who was really knowledgeable about this, he said, you know, Ed used to joke if somebody asked him, said it's a bird bath. Actually, George, it's a celestial representation of the earth. It's representing, there's 3 concentric circles there. There's a 124-inch circle, a 16, and a 68. And what it is, George, is it's showing the Earth and Mars and Saturn in their relation to the heavens. And what whole thing about Coral Castle is, what we have to remember is, it's a celestial representation of the heavens.
Well, he also called it a stargate, didn't he?
Called it a stargate, and that is one of the fascinating things. Now, we have to imagine there's a 9-ton swinging gate there. I don't know I know we've talked about it before, but you could press this 9-ton gate with your finger.
And it opens and closes.
And it opens. Yeah. Right. And here's the thing about it is, from the inside of Coral Castle, if you were to press this to Ed, this represented man's going out into going from the castle to the outside to another time dimension. It was symbolic of man's journey through time, he said, kind of like a revolving door. And, you know, I know we're going to touch on this in a minute, but I have to mention this. That stargate actually is in the tip of the Bermuda Triangle. The Bermuda Triangle goes into the Coral Castle, and it hovers right over that stargate.
And he knew that, didn't he?
He knew that. He had to.
He moved from Florida City to Homestead. And this is a story I think you and I talked about 4 years ago, Joe.
Right.
The blocks were put on a flatbed truck.
Correct.
The truck driver brings them to Homestead.
Right.
And Ed simply says, go ahead, just detach it, take off, and come back in about an hour.
Right.
And the truck driver was just amazed that he would bring up something like that all by himself. And he moved those blocks.
The funny thing is, the truck driver actually left his lunch on the tractor, on the trailer there. He went back to get it 30 minutes when he had told him an hour. And he was a bit scared. There was already 3 stones weighing about 10 to 12 tons on the trailer already. Now, Ed was not around. And the man took off. He was so scared.
Why did he move from Florida City to Homestead?
Well, now, Ed told the story in 1936 that he was afraid there was developments coming. So he made up this story like he had to get out of there because he didn't want anybody seeing how he worked. But there is a lot of speculation that the harmonic grid, the ley line, that electronic or like electric-type force that moves these stones, that moves through water, actually, they think through hurricanes or earthquakes, that harmonic grid is very fragile, George, and it can move. And what they're saying was Ed made an engineering mistake. He made an error in his surveying, and the magnetic grid was actually stronger in Homestead than it was in Florida City. So he was moving those stones out of Florida City into Homestead where that magnetic current, that ley line, was actually stronger. So he wanted to take advantage of that strength.
Could he feel these ley lines?
Yes, yes.
He had that ability?
He had that ability. He used the dowsing rod to find the water. But he said when he got near it, he could just feel the vibrations.
Now, what was this about some genetic code of Ed's DNA?
Well, that's something that a lot of people, when they read the book Waiting for Agnes, they kind of look at the reincarnation part of it. I just mentioned that because Ed's real thoughts, now, he loved the Casey writings. He read everything on Atlantis. You know, he believed that it was right off the coast of Florida. There was no doubt in his mind. But to Ed, to go back in the past, he believed that of course, they didn't talk about DNA back then. Ed called it the blood factor. And what he was trying to say.
Well, he was right.
Yes. The blood factor means that we could go back in time, and there was another George Norrie who was, you know, in Atlantis or Egypt or wherever you want to be, who looks just like you, your ancestor from somewhere.
Well, doppelganger?
Pardon me?
Like a doppelganger?
Yes, yes. And you're going to carry forth those memories and visions and everything. If you tap into it and pay attention to it, you can actually bring those things back into forefront. Recall that time and what you did and everything. And that was what he called the blood factor. So it's a strange thing, but it's plausible in a way, because I've seen pictures of, they did a thing on Jesse James not long ago. They went back and tapped into one of his relatives. And George, his relative that still lives in Missouri, it's an exact carbon. I mean, it looks like he was cloned from Jesse James.
Huh, he probably was.
And so if he was to tap into that time, maybe he could go back and see what James did, the whole works. In other words, it would be like going back and seeing yourself as you were before.
When he died in 1951, did a lot of people know him? Did he have any notoriety at that time?
Not really. You know, people just kind of took it for granted. He was not a laughing
His
stock.
Kidneys went on him or something,
yes,
right?
Yes, his kidneys, and he actually died of, like, stomach cancer.
Ugh.
And he could have, Mr. Buller told me, he went to see him a couple of days, and he said, Ed, why don't you get in the magnetic machine? Why don't you save yourself? And Ed had not eaten for a couple of days, and he told Mr. Buller, he said, JT, he said, I'm tired. I've done everything I want to do. He said, there's a few more stones I'd like to put in here, but he said, I'm just worn out. And he climbed on a bicycle and rode to Jackson Memorial Hospital and went into a coma and died 3 days later.
He had 25 one-ton rocking chairs in stone out there, didn't he?
Yes, yes. That, you know, people have asked me, you know, what's the significance of the 25? What he was trying to say with that was those chairs were placed at certain locations. He could sit down, and at night, he could watch the stars. He could see Orion's Belt from one, all those different things.
There was a reason for each placement.
George, nothing in that castle. Everything has a place. I still don't understand all of it. But what he was trying to say was these chairs are placed so that you can see the stars, and they have the balance there. And also, he said the stone telescope that he built is 25 foot tall.
Wow.
So he was trying to say it's a...
Everything's 25.
Yep, everything's 25.
Numbers were important to him, and he was good at math, wasn't he?
Oh, my. The guy had a fourth-grade education, and you couldn't beat him in math. And for one example, the precession of the Earth is 25,000 years. So there's another 25. There's like four different 25s that he connected to celestial activities.
And he was big into the mathematics of things, right? Steps, lines, everything. Everything had a reason in terms of numbers.
That's what he loved about math, because he said you can do everything with a mathematical formula, just like Einstein.
There's a stone marked of unknown origin there. What does that mean?
That is a fascinating story. The 9-ton gate, I was down there in 84. The 9-ton gate, that was when I first found it. It was still working beautifully. You could touch it. A little girl, 3-year-old, could move the thing. Well, in 1986, it's sitting on wheel bearings of a 1918 Ford truck, okay? Well, those wheel bearings, after 50 years, 60 years, they wore out.
Of course.
And the stone tilted, okay? So they called the University of Florida and the engineering department, and they said, hey, you know, explain the stone and what happened. And said, could you guys come down here and help us, you know, move this stone and fix it? They said, yeah, we're in the University of Florida. We can fix anything. Well, these guys with these big degrees, I don't mean to talk about people, but they go down there thinking, hey, you know, we'll fix this thing. Well, they got to looking at it. To find the center of gravity of this stone, which he had to run a hole down at George. He had no electricity except for his machine. This hole is perfectly drilled down the stone. He ran a rod, connected it to the wheel bearings, and they said, this is an odd shape. Imagine a wedge of cheese. That's what this stone looks like. Going down, matching that, they said the drilling part had to be perfect. It had to match the wheel bearings. Well, he got down there, and he said, there's just impossible. It would take laser technology today to find the center of gravity. Well, when they pulled the stone up, they had to go get 80-ton cranes, put chains around it, lift it up. Well, when they did, this weird-looking pie-shaped stone, about the size of a car tire but thinner, was underneath the stone, and they actually broke it. And they couldn't figure out how this stone was able to support the 9-ton gate. Well,
Hold on for a second. We'll pick that up, Joe, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back. Joe Bullard with us. We're going to take your calls with Joe next hour. We're also going to talk with him about his trip to Honduras and, of course, his observations about Mars as well. Incredible stories. Joe, we were talking about that stone of unknown origin near the 9-ton gate.
Yes, George. The actual machines, the big cranes that moved the stone actually broke this stone. Most of the stone was lost, but one piece of it survived. And so Coral Castle sent it to the geology department at the University of Florida, and they said, you know, they explained the story, you know, how could this support 9 tons? Well, the geology department got it. They started studying the stone, and, you know, I guess with all their degrees, they have to be careful of what they say, but they sent the stone back, and they said, this is not a meteorite, but we cannot determine the origin of the stone. The materials are not found on this earth. And they just listed it, material of unknown origin.
Jeez. You went to Honduras. What were you doing there?
Well, my wife is actually from Honduras. Her mother is a native Mayan. And that's how I've gotten to study a lot of these pyramids. And there's so much down there, George. The last time I was down there, there's a little place there called, well, it's actually a site called El Puente. And this was discovered in 1935. A Japanese archaeologist found this weird-looking map, and it led him to this structure. In fact, actually, last time we were talking about Coral Castle, you have so many listeners down there, you won't believe it. They listen to it. And the man called me, and he said, next time you come, I'd like to show you some places I think you'd be interested in. And I had an in because, like I said, my mother-in-law is full-blood Mayan. And there's a tribe up there, George, live in the mountains, and they have no access to the outside world. And they're called Chortis. That's their language, and that's what they are. And it took me 3 years to gain their confidence. And the man told me, he said, finally after 3 years, they said, I'm going to take you into a cave, and I think you're going to be interested in this. What happened was I went on a jungle trip. It was like way up in the mountains at night. I couldn't see anything that was going on. And we got out of this Jeep, walked about 30 minutes, and we came to this cave, and it was way, way down. We had to kind of walk carefully because of these huge stones. And I was kind of blindfolded. I couldn't really see. So when I was led into the cave, the man was showing me. He had actually looked at my book and looked at a lot of Ed's drawings and all these things. One of the things that's very mysterious, George, at Coral Castle, on Ed's front door and also on the 30-ton stone, is this weird drawing, and it shows the Earth in its orbit around the sun. And it looks like a strange elongated S. The Earth is at the bottom, and the sun is over to the right. Well, Ed used to say, he said, I used to think that, you know, everybody was right about the way the Earth goes around the sun, but I built a stone telescope and a sundial, and they defooled me. Now I know the correct path the Earth takes in its movement around the sun. The scientists should come down to Coral Castle, look at my drawing, and they would be amazed at how it affects science. Well, when I got into this cave, George, there was this weird, and most of the things, I didn't see any pictographs, but what everything was done was, it was drawn on pottery, like a lot of those ancient Mayan texts and stuff, and a lot of it was broken. But in one part, I saw a pictograph of that same drawing of the Earth that went around the sun, the same thing that Ed had put at Coral Castle. And I'm not an astronomer, so I don't understand how, with all this modern technology, we can not know the correct path. But Ed said it was wrong. So as I'm looking through here, they only let me stay in there like 20, 30 minutes. But one thing I noticed was the stone I was telling you about that was broken, and we sent it to the geology department, it had a weird gray quartzy-looking material running through it. Over in the corner on this shelf, I saw this, what I want to say was a saucer-like clay pot, and it had stars. It was almost silver with stars. And what's strange about this is Ed had explained in his dreams and visions that he had actually witnessed what he called the UFO crash. He didn't call them UFOs. He called them, you know, spaceships, that kind of stuff, in his dreams. And he said that the crash happened sort of like Roswell. And he said that at this time, he witnessed this crash. He didn't know what was going on because he just woke up in his dreams. And he said later on, as he's going through Chaco Canyon, he actually came upon these group of Indians, and they were doing a ceremony that they called the rattlesnake ceremony. And they had rattlesnakes, and they had the actual mouth, they're on the head of the snake, and their rattles. And I saw these same representations in this cave. Well, this dome-looking, spaceship-looking thing I was telling you about, Ed had described one. And this one that I saw in this cave, George, had this quartz-like material running around the center of it. And what had happened was Ed described an Indian that held this spaceship-looking article in the sky, acted like it crashed. He took the actual thing with his hand, the dome ship, crashed it into the sand, the same thing that Ed had seen in his dreams. And there was a basket, if you will. They're woven out of yucca, like strands, like they used to make to put beans and corn and that stuff in. George, there was the representation of what I call an alien face. It looked like the same face that Ed had carved at Coral Castle.
How about that?
It was faded, but it was done with a vegetable dye. And the alien face was standing on a group of numbers, and they were very, it was very faded. I couldn't tell it, but I could see the first numbers, and the numbers were 7129. I didn't think anything about it at the time, but later on I went back and I remembered there was a plaque over Ed's bed that he left. Now, this plaque was stolen. It was gone after he died. But what it said was the secret to the universe, and he gave these numbers, and I memorized those numbers. It was 7129-6105-195.
Sounds like lottery numbers, Joe.
Exactly. But I didn't relate it at the time. But as I came out, because it was kind of dark, I had a little flashlight. But as I came out, I thought there were no other numbers that I could tell, but the numbers 7129 matched the plaque that was over his bed.
How does that happen?
I'm like, and also there was a step pyramid there, very much like a baby Chichen Itza, square top, four sides, stair steps all the way up, made out of the same limestone as Coral Castle.
You know, we've talked about Leeds Skaldin, that, you know, he could be from another world, another dimension, but he possessed some incredible knowledge. How do you think he got it?
I think from what he told Mr. Bullard.
Because there's no question he has it.
Yeah. I think he goes back to that blood thing, because he said the magnetic, he actually explained, Mr. Bullard, he used the magnetic properties of the human mind. And, you know, George, there's a story where Mr. Bullard came in there one night. And, of course, you know, in Florida here, we have, you know, mosquitoes the size of helicopters and roaches that look like B-52s,
exactly.
You know, swampy here. And so they were in there, and Mr. Bullard said, God, the mosquitoes are bad tonight. He saw one land on the wall there, and Ed said, JT, he said, I can chase that mosquito off the wall. And Mr. Bullard said, yeah, right, you know. And he said, you don't believe it? He said, watch this. So he concentrated on him, and the mosquito moved. Mr. Bullard said, well, that's good, but it could be coincidence. So the mosquito moved again, and Ed said, okay, I'm going to count to three, and I'm going to move him on three. Counted to three, focused his eyes on him. That mosquito moved in 3 seconds. So I think, George, that he tapped into dreams and visions somehow, much like the prophets in the Bible times. I mean, this is it's a rare gift, and I think, I don't know how else to explain it. I don't want people to think I'm that weird, but I just don't know how else to explain what the man could do. Because there's no place on this earth, if you want to see Stonehenge, you want to see the pyramids, you want to see everything, it's at Coral Castle.
Mm-hmm.
There and more.
What was the tripod-type apparatus that was found out there?
Okay, that was very interesting. There's pictures of Ed. People will say, well, he moved it with the, you know, with the pulley and that, but that in a 10-ton, he only had a 10-ton pulley there. So his heaviest stone was 30 tons. So there's no way he moved it with the pulley.
No.
But the weird thing is that black box that's at the top, if you'll notice it, it has an iron cable running down from it, and that iron cable wraps around this stone that Ed is actually moving. You can see this whole thing in the photograph. I think he let somebody take this photograph because it's the only one in existence. And they think that the black box that's at the top of the pyramid there could have had the same anti-gravity properties as his machine. He could have had it hooked up, and he just flipped the polars there, George, the north and south pole magnets, and that just renders the stone, you know, it floats in the air just like Casey said. So there's just a lot of space. And now the black box, after Ed dies, everything is gone. Everything. His diary, his notes.
Who took it?
Well, the locals said that they believe that after Ed would not turn over his, you got to remember, this is World War II. They would love to have had Ed's equipment and his machine and everything. And so they believe that it was government sources, because these guys came in, these trucks came in there, cleaned the whole thing out. There was only a few things left. And they also said they did find one thing that was a map, and it was drawn on like a croaker sack. And they said it had hieroglyphics, weird-looking numbers. Nothing matched what we know of as, you know, longitude, latitude, these kind of lines, okay? And that was missing.
Missing? It's almost like what happened to Tesla when Tesla died.
same exact story.
They rate it and go and get it and everything.
Yeah, and that, here's another weird story. One of the guides that was down there said there was a croaker sack. We call them croaker sacks. It's a burlap bag, actually. Was hanging on one of the beams. There's beams inside its little living quarters there. And she said that it hung there for years and years. And she said one day a guy came in and was noticing it, said he was dressed immaculate, you know, derby hat and everything. And he said, "I'd like to buy that burlap sack." It had these weird markings on it. And she said, "Well, you know, you can't. It's part of Coral Castle." Well, she left to go on vacation. She came back in 2 weeks, just happened to be walking through there, and just happened to look up. The croaker sack was missing.
Gone. What does your gut tell you about Lead Skaldin? I mean, he was born a simple life. He didn't have any real formal education, did he?
No. No, he had a fourth-grade education. Ed was very sickly. He had a
He was a 140-pounder, right?
Yeah. Actually, he never weighed over 100 pounds.
Wow, that's small.
5 feet tall. And very... Now, he was wiry, but very thin. And, of course, he worked with his, you know, shirt off. And he was in good shape because he had to work around those stones and everything. But he was sickly as a child. He really couldn't attend school, but he read books. George, they said you could find him down in Homestead and Florida City 5 hours a day in the library. They actually tried to check out the books that he checked out. It was all on magnetisms, Egyptian stuff.
Yep.
Everything. He was a voracious reader.
Well, didn't he once say everything is a magnet?
He said everything. George, you know the rockets are coming in right as he's going out. The funny thing is he's always telling people, you know, come to Coral Castle, see what I've done. Of course, nobody pays any attention to him. Now, this was 1945, I think he wrote this, and he said, I think the rockets were just starting in, and he said, let me give you a tip on the rockets. On the science, he said, make the rocket head with a strong north pole magnet and put a strong south pole magnet at the tail, and then steer the rocket to the moon's north end, and you're going to have a man on the moon.
Well, he was right about that.
This is and he wasn't joking.
When's the last time you went down to Coral Castle?
Oh, gosh, it's been probably 8-9 years.
Privately owned, right, now?
Privately owned, right, yeah.
Lead Skaldin wanted to be buried there. They did not let that happen, did they, the new owners?
They did. Well, no, it wasn't so much the new owners. What happened was, and it's very mysterious, he died in that coma, and he had requested, Mr. Buller said, he actually went by the hospital and said, hey, you know, he wants to be buried at Coral Castle, and they put up this big stink. It was actually the city officials there who said, we don't have the proper they didn't have the proper paperwork to move his body from Miami, which is Jackson Memorial Hospital where he died, back to Homestead and to be buried in Coral Castle. So they just mysteriously moved the body out, and they say that it's buried in a Miami burial ground. I've not actually seen I've seen pictures of it, but I think one of my bucket list things is to go down there and dig him up and bring him to Homestead, you know?
Well, it's amazing work. I mean, Joe, what was your interest in all of this?
In the Coral Castle?
Yeah.
George, I found it on the In Search Of. I've always loved the pyramids. I studied them since I was a kid. I always felt like they were not built by slaves, dragon stones. I never bought that. But I did not know the place existed until Leonard Nimoy did the In Search Of program. I watched it one night. I was teaching at the college, and it came on. George, I jumped in my car. This was a Friday. I jumped in my car Friday night, drove 8 hours, because I thought I'd find a bunch of rocks down there. There was nothing there. And when I walked in there, it was like walking on the moon. I was telling your producer, Tom, we can sit here and talk about all this, George, but until you walk in there, until you see these 25-30-ton stones with 8-foot-thick walls and, you know, telescopes and rocking chairs that, you know, they're all balanced on gravity, George. They don't even have rocker arms on them. I was smitten. And, yeah, George, I went back and I was telling all the professors I worked with, and they said, you know what, quit the college, go home and write that story. And that's what I did.
Did you anticipate anything that you did not put in the book that you wished you did?
George, I think you and I could sit here and talk. I could have written a 1,000-page book on it. I just couldn't put in all the stories because I was afraid I would, you know, run out of pages and bore people. But no, in Waiting for Agnes, I covered every angle that was possible, every knowledge that I had. Of course, there's been a lot of knowledge, you know, that's come forward now. But this was 1984. Nobody was paying any attention to Coral Castle. There was only like one book written on the whole place. And what I concentrated on was, I'm not a scientist, so a lot of this kind of gets into my head. But what Mr. Buller told me was the private. What I loved was the private life of Ed. He told me about, you know, Ed's feelings of Agnes, how it hurt him. And, you know, people will say, oh, Agnes didn't exist. She did, George. And Ed was never the same.
Never. Stay with us. We're going to take calls with you, Joe, next on Coast to Coast AM.